A little bit of encouraging news has popped up this week. There has been increased enthusiasm around the possibility of a COVID-19 vaccine. I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit suspicious always of enthusiasm. I think sometimes the enthusiasm comes without enough context. And when we need context about COVID-19, we go to Dr. Catherine McCarty. She's an epidemiologist here at the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth campus, and she joins us this morning as our guest. Hey, Kathy, good morning. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning. It's great to be back with you.
So the experts are saying that a lot has to go right. They're saying, you know, optimistic, everybody's optimistic, but a lot has to go right. Can you talk a little bit? I know we had discussed this previously on the Neighbors program, but let's remind folks a little bit about what you need to do with a vaccine. We're concerned, of course, about the seriousness of COVID-19, but injecting people with something that's going to hurt them is really a bad plan. So how do scientists walk that line?
Very true. And we don't want to do that. And that's why it takes time. You know, there was this push, oh, we're going to have a vaccine in the fall, and we'd have a vaccine for testing in the fall, but we were never going to have one for mass distribution because we need to test long enough to make sure that there aren't these side effects and adverse reactions that may pop up later rather than sooner. And it really is obviously only way to know that is time. So, yeah, great news this week. We've had two studies reported in The Lancet, one of the highest-ranking medical journals, one coming out of Wuhan, China, and one out of a multi-center study in the U.K., showing really great promise. Some short-term side effects that people can get around any vaccination, which were made much better by people just taking Tylenol. They had randomized some people to taking Tylenol or not, and that helped a lot. And they showed that they get these antibody titers that were out there testing to see in the community where people have already been exposed and where we've already had COVID potentially or coronavirus out there without realizing it. So this is really great. One of the studies stopped at age 55, unfortunately, so we don't know what the vaccine is going to look like for more elderly people where we've seen greater disease and greater severity and, unfortunately, deaths in that age group. It also appears like, from these studies, that older people don't develop, and this is expected, our immune responses don't do as well as we get older, but their immune response is not as great. So in the next studies, what they were doing so far, what we call phase one and two studies, looking at just basic safety and dosing. So they'll try different doses and then look to see what the immune or that antibody response is so that they can narrow down having one dose, whether they need a booster shot, just like our other vaccine schedules. For a number of them, we need boosters to get that highest level of immunity. So they're trying to determine that. And then they're ready for both of these now, as well as another vaccine that's been tested out there to move on to phase three studies. So in larger groups of people to look at, again, efficacy, how effective it is, and the safety of it. So this really is very exciting.
I'm curious. Let's jump back to the antibodies, because, of course, our knowledge as consumers has sort of moved along with and in many cases really lagged behind that of the experts. But it's true that as the situation has evolved, we've learned a lot more. Some of the things we thought at the beginning are not true. Some of them are true, and we're learning more about it. The antibody thing, at one point the idea was, okay, if you get COVID or you're able to fight off COVID, you have antibodies in your blood that make it fabulous blood. Everybody wants this great blood. And then it was, we're not sure it's going to be able to keep you from getting COVID again. And now we're hoping that, yes, we need plasma from people who have had COVID because they have these good antibodies. Where are we exactly with the whole antibody thing?
No, it's still a work in progress, as you've suggested, and it just reminds us that science is always moving forward, and we're learning. And something I'm saying today may be different next month as we're learning more, because it's novel or new, so there's things to learn every single day. it appears that people who've been sicker to begin with, they've had their bodies have had to mount a greater immune response, and they're likely to maintain those antibody levels at a higher level that would be protective for longer.
All right. Well, that makes perfect sense, I guess, because, you know, with my vast scientific background, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Talking about viral load again, that viral load makes a difference, and it makes a difference in our likelihood of developing disease to begin with, which is why we've got masks and mandated now in the state, starting, the governor announced that yesterday, but starting Saturday, everybody needs to be wearing a mask, which is fantastic. Because that, you know, it doesn't stop the virus, but it decreases that viral load. So we can handle a few particles that might get around the mask, but, you know, for people not to develop disease.
Now, as an ethicist also, anybody who's watched too many TV shows and movies knows the kind of political pressure that is always brought to bear on our hero during a sci-fi movie. And they say, we've got to do something. We have to do something. And it's got to happen right now. And the governor's calling. And the president's calling. And, you know, and of course, the poor scientist has got something that's going to, you know, turn you into a newt if they give you the vaccine. But when you think about all of the money and the tremendous political pressure, and I guess by that I mean just pressure from the entire world to develop a vaccine and make it available. How do scientists and medical professionals cope with that kind of stress? Because their rigor would demand testing and a measured pace. And yet, literally, the entire world is clamoring at their doors, get us something now.
Well, thankfully, and that happens for sure, we have multiple levels of approval, approval that the science was done correctly. So as I said, these two articles that came out this week that were published in The Lancet received peer review, so review by a number of scientists to say, yep, we think that this science was done properly, and we trust the results. And that happens at multiple levels before going on to be approved. And then we have this ongoing study to look at long-term effects of any vaccines that are out there that might not occur during the time frame of a study to look at that short-term effectiveness. There's definitely that. But the other thing you mentioned, a key word, is that making it available. So it's not just a matter of, okay, we're going to discover the vaccine, and it looks like we are. We're doing really well, and we are going to have an effective vaccine. We have to be to deliver the vaccine to an awful lot of people. And as an ethicist, one of the first things to consider is, okay, who do we vaccinate first? Who gets access to it first? Because once we have one tested, we know it works. It's not going to be the next day, aha, come line up, everyone, and get your vaccine. It's going to take a while to get this distributed around the world, obviously. So we need to prioritize who's going to get it first. Very often when something new comes out and we've got treatment or whatever, we might go, especially for a vaccine, for our healthcare professionals because we need them healthy to take care of everybody else. I would say in ethicists and other people are working right now before there's this crunch and pressure to develop policies around, in this case, how we're going to prioritize the distribution of vaccines. The other thing about distribution is what do we need? What sort of, how is it going to be delivered? These two new ones that came out this week are delivered with a shot. So we're going to need to have enough supplies. We didn't expect, this is new, the novel coronavirus, we didn't expect we were going to be needing to vaccinate the entire world. But we don't have enough supplies. We don't have enough supplies right now.
And it's there's been conversation already about ordering and just manufacturing itty-bitty little glass bottles.
Yes.
Because you've got to put the vaccine in something. And, of course, there needs to be some kind of way that you can manufacture the vaccine. The scientists can take their time and develop their samples in the lab, but you've got to eventually be able to somehow mass produce it. And so a lot of the logistics down the line, sometimes it seems as though, aren't they rushing it? They don't even have a vaccine yet. But obviously, wiser heads are prevailing and saying, when we get one, we're going to need all these, you know, little itty bitty glass vials. And so we're making a bunch of them.
That's right. And if the older people need a booster, then we need twice as many for the older people.
That the logistics of trying to develop something like this are so overwhelming, and yet maybe the only good thing is that no one has ever had, at least in modern times, no one has had to do this before. So maybe people can be forgiven if there isn't really a pattern to follow in terms of getting some of the logistics worked out. But at least somebody's paying, and there are a lot of somebody's paying, close attention to the science. Anything else that we should be thinking about with regard to how we move forward? I've heard some really interesting conversations back and forth about kids going back to school, and I've heard some really well-reasoned scientific opinions on both sides. Do you have an opinion? And I'm asking for an opinion because I'm guessing that nobody's got the definitive answer right now about school reopening.
Yeah, I think public school reopening is going to be really hard because we can't distance. And again, it's around viral load. It's hard to remind kids to keep their mask on. They'll take it off. And I think it's really hard for public schools. There have been these talks about, could we do sort of A day, B days where we've got half the kids there, and that might help a little bit, but still next to impossible. You know, at the med school, we've gone ahead and looked at what it would take to have our students 6 feet apart in our lecture halls, and we could have maybe 15 to 20 students of 65 in a class. It's just not practical. So I can't imagine, especially seeing cases going up right now, that especially in young people, because it's hard to get that third of the young people. They feel invincible.
I was thinking that older kids obviously would maybe be easier to impress upon them the importance of wearing a mask, and yet you do hit a point as a kid, respectfully speaking, where you really do feel that you're invincible, and this is something that other people worry about. Nothing's going to happen to you, and so that then becomes another issue.
Yep. They forget about their parents and grandparents.
Yeah. Well, and that happens, COVID or no COVID, but that's another story. Catherine, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. It's always great to have you kind of parse the science for us a little bit and give us sort of a behind-the-scenes peek at what's going on. Thanks again for being our guest, and hope to talk with you soon.
Yeah, great to talk to you. Have a great day.
Dr. Catherine McCarty this morning. She is an epidemiologist with the University of Minnesota Medical School, Duluth Campus.